This is WMRA. I'm Chris Boros. 50 years ago, Harrisonburg resident Ed Morrison was shattered when his 18-year-old brother Mike was brutally murdered the night of his senior prom, along with his date Debbie Means in a small Illinois town. Ed decided to write a short story about the incident, but realized there was much he didn't know about what happened. That short story is now a 270-page book called Bad Moon Rising that Ed wrote with his wife Mindy. I had a chance to speak with both of them, and I asked Ed to talk about why he decided to write this book 50 years later.
Well, I didn't sit down and just decide to write the book. Mindy and I, my wife, who's a co-writer, we went to a book launch in March of 2018.
As he was listening, he thought he had a story, too, that he wanted to write down for our sons.
Yeah, the short stories were moving, and they were emotional, and I just thought, I think I have a story that I wanted to tell from my family, primarily from my boys. So about 2 days later, I told Mindy, I think I'm going to write a little short story. And I did, 12 pages long. I thought I knew the story. And Mindy read it. She put in big red ink, wow. So then I started calling some people that were attached to the story. I had a scrapbook that I started from day one, from when the murders happened. So I started calling people and started finding out that the story just didn't affect our family. It affected the entire community. And it just snowballed.
When you started researching and writing the book, how hard was that for you to relive this stuff?
We started on March 20th, 2018. And I would call some of my brother's classmates and tell them we're thinking about writing a story. And half of them would cry, which would make me choke up also. And August the 8th, in fact, I just read that this morning. On August the 8th, Mindy looked at me and said, I think you're depressed. And I told her I didn't want to visit this story every single day. I was visiting the murder every single day. It was wearing on me. Mindy said, you just get the facts down. I can help you write the story. And we wrote the story together.
Mindy, how hard was it for you to relive this through your husband?
I have always been on the outside of this story, looking in. And so I think I was probably able to write it a little more objectively. But he was, you know, getting the information, doing all the research, talking to investigators who remembered every moment during that time because it was the biggest thing that had ever happened for most of them. So he was doing a lot of that. He was talking to sheriffs and judges and lawyers and all of these people and getting all these court records and police transcripts and digging through all of that. So he was occupied with all of that. And I was just trying to take his information and put it in a story form and make it feel like the reader was along on the journey researching all this as well, discovering all the new information.
When you were doing the research, were there things that you discovered that you didn't know about, like it was brand new information to you?
Probably half the book.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it was amazing.
Wow.
I would uncover something, and it was just unbelievable that what I thought I knew, the perception that I had, what happened, and also following the killer, I really didn't know anything. And so that was a kind of a revelation. And it was kind of a healing process, too, to find out what really did happen.
So prior to this, you never really researched the killer? You didn't know too much about him?
Superficially, I knew where he served time in prison. We had moved away from Illinois, and we were living in Germany. So we were detached from really following him. We didn't know that, don't want to get into the story too deep, but he was out of prison. And we didn't know any of that. We just uncovered so many details that that came up in his prison record and the police records and all that.
To me, it was like he was a 17-year-old kid still stuck in that moment, you know, all, over all of these years, kind of bewildered and wide-eyed what had happened. This bomb exploded in his family's life. And he was still kind of navigating that debris field somewhat. So it seemed like to me, once he started researching all this and finding out all this information, talking to the killer's family even, that he was finally able to get a hold of this story, grab it by the tail and hang on to it, and find out exactly what was going on during all of that time. And afterwards, over the next years, you know, until the killer's death, where, you know, he just continued doing this kind of thing. So he was able to talk to not only people who were involved in his brother's case and his girlfriend, but on beyond in Idaho, in California, in the Chicago area. I mean, this guy was all over the place.
I don't want to focus too much on the killer, but you talked to his family?
I felt like I needed to talk to somebody that really knew him. So my sister, Cecilia, she helped. And so I tracked down one of his nephews. His siblings are all deceased except for one. She was in a nursing home. She's since passed away. I really didn't know what I was going to say. And I'm not afraid to call anybody. And when I started dialing his nephew, Mindy asked me, she said, "Well, what are you going to say?" And I said, "I don't know. I just know I have to talk to him." So they picked up the phone. He did, the nephew, and I told him who I was. I told him that I was doing a story on family history and that his family had some interaction with our family. I didn't tell him his uncle murdered my brother. So he started opening up, and I verified who his grandpa was and all this. And then I said, "Oh, you had an uncle by the name of Marshall Wayne Stauffer." He said, "Oh, yeah, but we didn't talk about him. Hardly anybody ever knew him." And I said, "Oh." And then the nephew's wife got on the phone, and she said, "Hey, who is this? Are you a reporter?" So I fessed up and told them that their uncle had murdered my brother and my brother's girlfriend on prom night. And I thought I was going to hear click. But they said, "Well, you need to talk to my cousin. He knows more about him. I'll have him get a hold of you." So the other nephew calls me. They really didn't know much about him. But I've talked to both of them several times since then, and they want to read the book. They want to read about their uncle. And it said that they don't take ownership of him. They are not their uncle. But they want to learn about him. So that was was kind of a scary moment, but I'm glad I did. I'm glad I called him.
Let's talk about the person who matters most in this story, and that's your brother, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me what he was like?
Mike was 15 months older than me. He was really my protector. I never got bullied or Mike would take over. We were best friends from the time up through high school. So a lot of high school friends of ours, they don't know the background of our stories growing up when we were little kids. We were an Air Force family and bounced around all over. So it was my sister, who was 18 months younger than me, and my brother and I, we were just our little own core group. We were buddies. You know, we palled around. When we moved somewhere, we didn't necessarily look for new friends. We had us three. You know, so I tell stories in the book about some, you know, the relationship Mike and I had, and then how it evolved in high school. You know, you're not as close. You don't pal around as much, you know, as you did when you were little kids. Mike was a smart guy. The murder happened on May 4th, and graduation night was May 29th, and he would have graduated as co-valedictorian. So that night, they asked me if I'd walk on stage at graduation to accept his valedictorian award, which was tough. Yeah. I was just hoping I wouldn't break down.
Yeah.
And he was a star athlete also. He was going to play football at Southern Illinois University, majoring in math. You know, valedictorian, he had the world ahead of him, and then ripped from underneath him that one night on prom night.
You talk in the book about a fight you had with him,
mm-hmm.
prom night.
The night before the prom.
That's
exactly right.
That still haunts you, you wrote.
I thought I had time. We always, you know, siblings battle. We had the biggest battle of our life the night before and never made up. And so that's haunted me. But we wrote about relationship with my brother when I was little because that fight did not define our relationship. But it still lingers over me. Yeah. I thought I had time. He thought we had time. We never made up.
You think about him every day, probably?
I have this wound on my hand I've had for 50 years that reminds me every day of that battle we had. It's never gone away. Still have it.
What did you know about his date, Deborah Means, who also died that night?
I didn't know her that well. In fact, Mindy did most of the research with Debbie's friends, and that whole chapter that we've written about Debbie, Mindy, I think even the girls that have read the book that were Debbie's friends told us that Mindy nailed it. So Mindy did the research on that.
What was that like contacting Deborah's family?
She made a big impression on a lot of people. She was an attractive girl, but she also had an attractive personality. But she wasn't the typical 15-year-old, 14-year-old girl that is vying to be popular, trying to please everyone. She had a real kind of a core to her. She knew what she liked, what she didn't like. She wasn't going to be somebody that she wasn't. And she was kind of feisty. She had a real sense of what she was willing to do, what she was going to put up with, and what she was not going to put up with. So there was an edginess to her. And the reason why I shared those in the chapter about Debbie was because I think that's partly why they didn't survive that night, because she fought back really hard. And people who fought against this guy did not survive. Those who did not fight him survived the ordeal. You know, it's not anything negative against Debbie. I mean, that's what you're often told to do, is to fight for your life. But it didn't work out for her and Mike. At first, her dad was willing, whenever Ed called him, he was willing to collaborate with him and share what they remembered about Debbie. But then whenever Ed called back a few days later, her mother said it was just still too difficult for them. They just couldn't revisit that, which, you know, we completely understood. So we didn't have the family stories. So we just took these little snapshots that people shared with us about Debbie to help the reader understand who this was. And I think it also helped me, as well as those reading it, understand who she was also that night.
Was there any family interaction when this happened between Ed, your family, and Debbie's family? Because your brother and Debbie are buried next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Debbie's parents were just acquaintances with my parents. They didn't really know each other that well. But then they became pretty close right after that. There was no animosity, no blaming each other. And they came over to the house quite a bit for about a month or two. But then they wanted to get out of there. It was too much for them, especially for Debbie's mother, June. And so Bob Means was supposed to be going to Vietnam within a couple of weeks after her murder, after Debbie's murder. And the Air Force was kind enough to cancel that because then his family would have to have been left behind. Debbie had a younger brother, David. So they requested to be transferred out of there, and they moved away to Germany. So they were completely detached on what was going on with the murderer and the case, pretty much by choice. They needed to get away.
And your family did that too, though, right? You eventually moved?
I stayed. My family in 1971, I think it was. Yeah, they moved to Maryland. But I was going to college in Illinois, so I stayed. And they moved away.
Hmm.
And they moved away because they were always, my parents were always the mother and father of the murdered boy. They'd walk into a restaurant and people would start whispering and pointing a little bit. And they could never get away from that if they stayed in that little town. And so they moved away for their own sanity. Yeah.
Did that happen to you too? You were 17 when it happened?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like as a teenager? I mean, did you face that too? People go, oh, there's Ed, you know, his brother died. Do you remember that?
You know, when I go back to Muskuta, a little town, that still happens to a point, do you think, Mindy?
Somewhat. You're still the brother.
I'm still the brother of the murdered
boy. And a lot of times people call him Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So that still does happen. But now I embrace that because I'm trying to honor my brother with this book. if we make any money off of it, we're going to help fund the scholarship that was established in their name 50 years ago. So we're not writing the book to make money. We want to give back to the scholarship that I was the first one to receive the scholarship, the first male to receive the scholarship. There's one goes to one male and one female from the high school class, so graduating high school class. So we want to give back to that.
Do you think writing this book has given you a little more closure on all of this, or the opposite maybe?
You know, it'll never bring closure because it'll never bring Mike back. But it has helped me move on, and maybe Mindy can describe it. Tell them how you think I was stuck in the moment.
Yeah, you were still kind of stuck, like you weren't quite sure what had happened, you know, at that time. But as you learned more and researched more and talked to all these people, he got a better sense of who this guy was that did this to his family, that did this to Mike. So I think you came to grips with it. You came to an acceptance.
I tried to emulate my mother, who was saintly, literally. She forgave the killer even before we knew who did it. I could never do that.
Even before they found the bodies.
Even before we found the bodies, she told me they're dead, Eddie, and I've already forgiven who did it.
She had a dream.
She had a dream about it.
That's crazy.
And I wasn't able to do that. I tried to emulate my mother, but I just couldn't get to that point. But this book has been a healing where, you know, I think about my mother a lot. Hopefully I honor my mother in the book. I could not have written this book with my parents still alive, because there's some stuff disclosed in there that I never really wanted them to know. So my mother she moved on from the murders from day one, and I never did. But now I think I'm kind of moving on. And even in the book, I talk about some songs that apply. And so I talk about Paul McCartney's song, Let It Be. And I think I just need to just let it be. There's nothing I can do about it. And Eddie, it's time to move on.
Speaking of songs, the name of the book is Bad Moon Rising, which comes from the Creedence Clearwater Revival song, and that is the song your brother was listening to before he left for prom.
Yes.
And when you hear the lyrics, I know the end is coming soon. I hope you are quite prepared to die. It's bound to take your life. That is haunting.
It is haunting.
Hope you got your things together. Hope you are quite prepared to die. Looks like we're in for nasty weather. One eye is taken for an eye.
That song was only out on a little 45 record. It wasn't even out on an album yet. It just came out in April of 1969. So this is May 3rd, prom, brand new song, all over the radio, and he loved that song. I'm not sure if he paid attention to the words to the song. It was just a catchy tune. But when I went down to his bedroom a couple weeks later after he died, that record was on his record player.
Don't go around tonight. Well, it's bound to take your life. There's a bad moon on the rise.
How long did it take for you to listen to it and go, whoa?
I couldn't listen to it for a long time. I'd hear it on the radio and I'd turn it off. And it's taken me a long time even just for the last few years. But my sister and her husband and my brother, Joe, and Minnie and I, we went to see John Fogerty 4 or 5 years ago in Atlantic City. And we rejoiced. We partied like Mike was there. And we sang Bad Moon Rising with John Fogerty.
When someone does read the book, what do each of you hope someone takes away from reading about your brother and this story?
Well, a really close friend of mine, known since seventh grade, he called me after he read it. In fact, he texted me and he said, I'm through chapter 8. I'd be a lot farther if I'd stop crying. So then when he finished, he hadn't spoken with his brother in 13 years, he told me. They were estranged from each other. He ordered a book for his brother and put a note in there and said, "It's time."
Oh. Ed and Mindy Morrison's new book is Bad Moon Rising. It's available now. We have more information at WMRA.org. Ed and Mindy, thank you so much for coming. I'm so sorry for your loss, and I really appreciate both of you coming in today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Mm-hmm.